Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 332 for comics originally released on December 18th, 2013. Now, starting us off in DC is Harley Quinn number 1. Now, we had talked a little about the Zero issue of this back when it came out a few weeks ago, where they did all the different artists and such. So this is one of those series that kind of sort of gets two first issues in some respects, which we'll see if that helps it or not. The one thing, Drew, that really stood out at me in this issue was the art. Amanda Connor, Jimmy Palmiotti do a great job on the writing, but Chad Harden knocked it out of the park, I think, with the art. It had just some great stuff. There was a sense of acting to it, a sense of physicality and blocking to it. And just there were a couple of panels here and there that just blew me away. Has he done a whole lot? I don't recognize his name.
Yeah, I don't know who that is.
All right, so this may be a up-and-coming artist. If so, this is a great opportunity for him. This was a first issue that I thought really served well as a first issue because they set up Harley's new status quo in Coney Island. We got a tour of her place. So we get to go on the job interviews. We really get to know kind of what her new status quo is. And getting so many first issues these days where they just kind of tease at that stuff and say, yeah, we'll get to it at some point during the first arc or later. I like getting a first issue that really kind of gets the ball rolling, sets the scene, and I think gives people enough to kind of decide if they're going to stay with it or not for the duration. Do you feel the same way or do you feel differently?
I thought the art was solid. I agree with you there. I'm just kind of flipping through it now, kind of seeing all the... looking at the emoting faces, the various emoting faces of Harley Quinn throughout this book. And she does go through a wide range of emotions. And when you mentioned that, I was kind of like, let me look and see what he's talking about. I'm like, yeah, she really does. She really does go through a ton of different acting and emotions on her face. And they're all drawn very uniquely and very well, mm-hmm. very well. So I was kind of mesmerized by that.
It's got a Kevin Maguire aspect to the art mm-hmm. in a good way.
Yeah.
And he's one of the others that I think is really known for that kind of expressive faces mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
I thought Zero was a very interesting book and a great way to introduce us to a character in a very unique way. And I thought this was just more of a standard introduction issue, but a very, very solid one. And like you said, it was cool to see the locale, where she's going, where her stomping grounds are going to be. You get to see her place and some of the supporting characters. I liked a lot of that. And yeah, the action sequences were great as well. I mean, there's a lot to like in this book.
Yeah. One thing I'm curious what your take is, because I haven't decided what mine is, if I liked it or not. This issue, aside from on the first page mentioning Mr. J, the Joker, in Arkham Asylum, there's really nothing in this issue that anchors it too heavily, if at all, to the DC universe and such, which means this really stands on its own. And I guess my question where I'm kind of wavering a little is, did it stand a little too much on its own? Is it a little too disconnected from, say, the rest of the DC universe or even the rest of the Batman family stuff in Gotham? Or was this a really smart move to take it out of that and have the character, you know, have to stand on her own 2 feet and, you know, support a book solo?
Yeah, I wonder if we'll get some of the standard cast of characters. I didn't read her last series. Was it like 30 issues or something like that, the last run that she had?
Thereabouts. Yeah. And then she was in Gotham City Sirens with Catwoman and Poison Ivy, too.
Okay. And, I didn't read either one of those, so I don't know what her rogues gallery is, if it's, you know, similar to the Joker's or...
Technically, her rogues gallery would be Batman, Nightwing, because she is a villain.
Right. Yeah, that's what I mean. Who her foils are, if they're the same as the Joker's, you know, are. And
pretty much. Yeah. She's more defined by her supporting cast, or the people she hangs out with, being the Joker, Poison Ivy, Catwoman, her hyenas, which there's no real sign of here.
So that's stuff we could get down the road and stuff.
Oh, totally.
So yeah, that would be great.
But the question is, does it make sense to take a lot of those hardcore Gotham City characters, transplant them to Coney Island for a story or two? Or just have her go and do her own thing?
Yeah, if Gotham is, how close is it geographically to Coney Island? We don't really know.
It seems to shift over time as to how close it is or isn't, depending who's writing and how close they need it to be, I think. It's just interesting they chose Coney Island itself versus a Coney Island-like suburb or area of Gotham City or some such. You know, this could have been the Carnival District or whatever of Gotham.
They seem to have very much
parks out the wazoo.
Yeah. You know?
I'm leaning towards it being a smart move that they kicked it out of Gotham City and put it somewhere else, but I'm not sure yet. So we'll see how it goes. I thought this was a strong start to the series, a good kind of introduction for new readers and a reintroduction for existing readers to the character. I like how they're blending classic aspects of her past as, you know, the Harley Quinn, you know, psychiatrist or whatever, and newer elements from the video game and stuff like that in terms of the visuals and whatnot.
Yeah, it seems she's going to have two jobs, both of them legit, to support her, to make her rent payments. And she didn't seem to be even thinking that, you know, I'll commit crime to earn the money to to pay my rent. So that's neat. You know, that's not what I was expecting. So yeah, that's,
we'll see how long that lasts.
Yeah.
It could go for a while. It may not. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you couple this with an interesting Zero issue, and it's a promising start for Harley Quinn. I like this issue a lot. I thought it was solid. I was very kind of pessimistic as I was reading the solicits for this, thought it would be way too campy. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think it was. I didn't think it was too campy. I thought it worked really well, with just enough camp. And I thought this was solid. And I think I'll stick around for a while. And I'm excited for this title. And I think it's going to be a good seller for DC. And I gave it a 4.
Yeah, I think it's a very solid 4 out of 5 for me too. I think it's a good addition to the Batman family. This is one that either is really going to kind of catch on and do well, or it's going to be seen as another in an already too expansive corner of the DC universe with the Batman family.
Well, Dark Knight is ending.
True, as is Talon.
As is Talon. So there is some room. Now, Dark Knight was doing pretty solid in sales, wasn't it? It was probably in the 40s.
40s to 50,000. Yeah, it was solid. It was not going for sales reasons.
So Harley has something to live up to in that regard anyway, to kind of fill that void.
Well, I was kind of thinking that the Batman Dark Knight ended because they needed to make room for that weekly Batman series.
Mm.
And if they add the weekly Batman Eternal, I think is what it's going to be called. In addition to this, even with those other two going away, it's still about a quarter of the lineup over at the New 52 being Batman family titles. And I think, you know, Harley's, like I said, a good solid addition, a logical one to put in there. But I would like to see DC kind of diversify their line a little bit more. Again, this is one that I think will do well for them, but I think there's going to come a point where some people are saying, you know, I want to get the hell out of Gotham, which may be a very smart move for this to be literally out of Gotham in that case. But, you know, we'll see how that goes.
Is she still a part of Suicide Squad as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, that's interesting because that wasn't mentioned in there at all. I wasn't even thinking about that when I read it. But yeah, she's one of the key players in it right now, along with Deadshot, and obviously Amanda Waller and one or two others. And they're building up a relationship with one of the other characters in her in that title. That's set in, last I looked, Louisiana was where Bellerive was. Whether it still is in the New 52 or not, I think it is.
Well, I'd be anxious to see if the success of the Zero issue, of course, continues with this issue number one and has any kind of residual effect for Suicide Squad then and lifts it up a little bit sales-wise, if she's as hot as she seems to be.
It might. It wouldn't surprise me if they cross over the two books, but it does start to beg the question of this character sort of having three geographical homes of sorts. Coney Island, where this book is set, you know, the Belle Reve area of Louisiana, where Suicide Squad is home-based. Granted, it's a traveling show, so it moves around. And then just the character's roots in Gotham City. So if they can juggle that well and it feel natural and not kind of, wait, where is she now and how's that working out? I don't think that'll trip up a lot of people, but I think that's going to be something to see how they handle.
Having separate locales, you mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, again, she's a major player in the Suicide Squad. They're building up relationships with her and stuff there that make me think she's probably not going to exit that book anytime immediately. That yet they've got her set in a completely disconnected from the Suicide Squad manner now in Coney Island with this issue. Even if you disregard the roots from Gotham City, Coney Island in Louisiana, they're a little ways away.
Yeah.
So how does that play out? You know, and some people, that's not going to phase at all. They're reading one of the books or even both, and they just don't care. Other people, it's good. Well, if you know, it's if you're playing the shared universe, which DC clearly is, you got to play within that. And this is one of those cases where they may trip up on that fairly significantly if they're not careful.
Yeah, I mean, we struggled with this last week a little. At least I did. You know, with Nightwing being in Chicago and being in Forever Evil storyline, and mm-hmm. and it's just tough to swallow.
So, do you follow The Mentalist, the TV show?
Yeah.
They just moved the character to Austin. I live in Austin. The first case he's on takes place in Brooklyn. They fly back and forth to Brooklyn, coach, numerous times. Enough so that while I'm watching the episode, I actually pulled up a website, said, okay, how long is a flight from Austin to New York City or whatever and stuff? 4-hour flight, and they're doing it how many times a day? You can tell when the writers don't really think about the geography of the story some. And it breaks the sense of reality, the sense of continuity, the sense of believability. Because if a writer can't even get those basic things right, it throws everything else, not so much into question, but they lose the benefit of the doubt. And if they're going to expect Harley Quinn to be bouncing between Coney Island, Louisiana, and wherever else, that could be something that you know, weakens various titles for some readers.
Yeah.
Again, others may not care at all.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. You can't really have your cake and eat it too. You know, if you're your shared universe, you reap the benefits of it, but you also have to play by those rules, you would think.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, because until you mentioned it, I hadn't even really thought about the whole Suicide Squad aspect of it, and I'm one of those that's in the shared universe camp of, you know, I'm expecting them to play in that arena.
Yeah.
So, well, if there comes a point, if it's really good, it doesn't matter.
Exactly. It's when it's not as good, and then these flaws start to stand out a little bit.
Yeah, they stand out and you can't excuse them because it's so good or mm-hmm. something like that. Interesting. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah.
This is Amazing Spider-Man 700.5. This is the fifth issue of a .12345 run of Amazing Spider-Man featuring Peter Parker. And this is the third of three stories, not really counting the backup features. They did one story in issues .1 and .2. Which I thought was okay, but fairly forgettable. Another story in the .3 and .4, which I liked and thought was fun. And then this one here in the .5. Now, since it's been a while since we've had any Peter Parker stories, and that's what all this is, I figure we'll talk a little about kind of each of those, but focus more on the .5 here.
Okay.
This was one where it felt like these were inventory stories that could have been played out at any time before Superior Spider-Man started. Now, whether they literally are inventory stories or not, I don't know. But it seems like the sort of thing, if I were running a 3-times-a-month book, I would want to have a couple of things I could just slot in whenever. And certainly the Aunt May storyline for the first two issues felt that way. The what happens when the villains get beat up and need to get patched up at a hospital stuff from .3 and .4, that felt that way. But it was one of those that I thought, with each progressive story, they got better. Did you kind of feel that way? What were your thoughts?
I enjoyed the Aunt May stuff for what it was. It was very light and fluffy and a nice kind of take on, you know, the malaise that Peter Parker feels as Spider-Man and the pressure that he feels. I liked that. I thought it was good. Probably could have been done in one issue. It didn't need to be stretched out over two. I hated the Black Cat backup story in issue two. Mm-hmm. Didn't care for that at all. I really liked the two-parter about the underground hospital for bad guys. I thought that was really strong. And I'd never seen that take before, and I liked it a lot. I thought it was really good. And then, you know, the last one, the current one, issue 5, is really tugged on my heartstrings, man. I thought it was really, really good. The little backup with the kid was great. And then
I thought that
the FF stuff was all right. It was a pretty good little action farce type thing. I liked it. And it's a different type of Spider-Man. It's really, really different than the Superior that I'm used to over these last 25 issues or so. So it was different, but in a fun and comfortable way. But it didn't kind of harken, I'm kind of all over the place here, but it didn't really harken back to like just the previous run of Peter Parker. It was almost like the Stan Lee era of Peter Parker Spider-Man. It seemed like it went way back.
I wouldn't say that it went that far back. It certainly was not the Horizon Labs, you know, right before Superior Spider-Man era, but it seemed to be something that could have been almost any point since they had kind of unified the titles under the Amazing Spider-Man umbrella. And it showed different aspects of Peter Parker. You know, the Aunt May story was very much the more older school, family-oriented Peter Parker, you know, all of that. The one with the hospital for the villains, the Black Lodge or whatever, was more almost the loner Spider-Man. That could have played out at any point from the 80s through, you know, 5-6 years ago, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, this story with the Fantastic Four also could have played out almost at any point, you know, from the late 70s on till today almost, with a few minor tweaks for what the FF looked like at the time or what have you. Because it was very much kind of future foundation looking or whatever. But I really enjoyed this story probably the most. It was the funnest. It was the most kind of, I don't say lighthearted, but it showed Peter Parker and the Fantastic Four, which is a staple of the character in the title since the beginning. And there were just some fun aspects to it. I thought Sean Chen just did a great job on the art. The writing had a good flair to it. But what I found very interesting is each of these three stories, for the most part, would have played out so, so very differently with the Superior Spider-Man versus the Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
You know, I think the first one with Aunt May could have played out very similarly with some very different, you know, riffs in a few places, but the basic plot would have been the same. But man, the Superior Spider-Man we're getting today would not have put up with some of this stuff in this storyline with the Fantastic Four and would have had a very different take on the villain hospital.
Yeah.
Probably having been in there a few times as Doc Ock.
And I don't think he would have been as affected by the kid and the backup story either.
That's... Yeah, probably not. But I think the backup feature in point 4 where the kid's getting bullied or whatever.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that one. That was a good one, too.
That would have played well with the Doc
yeah.
Ock. I liked how this reminded us of the Peter Parker that we haven't been getting lately. Mm-hmm. You know, there were a few things. Like, I mean, the backup feature here with the kid getting shot or whatever, there's a certain, you know, classic great power, great responsibility theme to that story that's again, classic Spider-Man in many respects. And we're getting that theme played out very, very differently with Superior Spider-Man. And while all of these 5 issues, again, felt kind of sort of like inventory stories in some regards, it was nice to get some Peter Parker stories these days. Remind us of what we're missing. I was expecting there to be a bit more cohesiveness to the 5 issues than we got. And I think shipping 1 the first week and then the point 2 and 3 the next and then the point 4 and 5 the next was an interesting decision.
I think it was a bad decision. Especially when we discovered what we really have here. I really didn't know going into it what these 5 issues were. Mm-hmm. At first, I thought, well, maybe it's a 5-part Peter Parker story, and then that makes sense, a little bit of sense. And what it turned out to be was more along the lines of what's going on over in the Daredevil miniseries. You know, it just seems like a bunch of different standalone stories, some 2-parters, and that's a different animal. And for them to go with the way their schedule was set up. And, you know, it must have a lot to do with December, and maybe they didn't realize what the shipping schedule was going to be at the time. But you would think they would be able to figure that out, being a big company like that. But
again, that high-tech thing known as the calendar.
Exactly. To have a two-parter and then another two-parter and then to couple part two of the first story with part one of the second story in the same week doesn't make any sense to me. If you're going to,
I think it makes more.
Oh, go ahead.
I think it makes more sense than doing parts one and two in the same week as separate issues.
Yeah. Make one double-sized issue, maybe.
I think they should have done this as maybe a quarterly special or something. Maybe not quarterly, maybe every 6 months. Something, just periodically drop a 64-page, here's a Peter Parker story to get you through while you're reading Superior. Mm-hmm. You know, and do a little bit more constant reminder of, yeah, we haven't forgotten about Peter, but no, you're not getting him back anytime soon. Whereas this seemed to come out of the blue. The five-part nature of it, like you said, was weird, because I was expecting a five-part story. Not, again, the series of miniseries almost that we got. And then again, like you said, the shipping, you know, part of the end of one story and the start of the next concurrently was odd.
And there's nothing to me that said we really need these two issues to come out the same week. So there would have been no problem in my mind having it one per week and ship one on Christmas Eve, and then the other one on the 31st, and I think it would have worked out fine. I mean, you've got something so shipping then, so I see no reason why they couldn't have spread it over the five weeks of Christmas, or 5 weeks of December, and just done it that way. It makes, I still don't get it. I still have no idea why they did what they did.
Well, it's particularly odd, given that the last two shipments of December, the Christmas week one, is got like I think it's Avengers and Origin from Marvel, and then the following week, the last week of the year, has like four things, I think it is.
Yeah.
So just nothing from Marvel.
You had room in your schedule to have them spread out.
I think that would have been a good move. I mean, overall, this is stuff that, frankly, if they'd skipped the five issues, I probably would never have noticed. But they did them. I felt, like I said, for me, the story with Aunt May was good. The next one was better. This one was even better. The 0.5 issue was a very solid 4 out of 5 for me. I'm glad we got this stuff. I like seeing Peter, and it really reminds me of just what kind of amazing stuff we're going to get when he comes back and has to pick up the pieces of everything Otto has done in his name.
Yeah. I agree. It's a 4 out of 5 for me as well. I enjoyed it. I really liked all of them. I just didn't like it's the way they were released. And not knowing exactly the reasons why. But the issue itself, the 0.5 issue, was really good, and I enjoyed it. And yeah, I have to give it a 4 as well.
Yeah, this is stuff that hopefully will tide people who are waiting for just more Peter Parker stuff. Hopefully this will tide them over. I think if they had done this as, again, like a quarterly thing, or every 4 months, 5 months, something to where it was a sporadic, and here's another Peter Parker story, you know, kind of thing, that might have worked too. But interesting stuff. Shall we move on to our other book of the week?
Sure.
This is The Midas Flesh, number 1 of 8, from Boom Box, which is a new imprint of Boom Studios. Boom Studios actually has quite a few imprints these days. When I was talking on, I guess it was the Mayo Report, when I was mentioning how Boom didn't have much in the latest previews, the December one at the time, I had hit the Archaea section, said, well, it's not Boom, it must be over, because they got Boom, they've got Archaea, they've got Boombox, they've got the Kaboom Kids, too many imprints. Anyways, this was one where the concept intrigued me, of basically somebody deciding to, I guess, weaponize King Midas's touch. And it's like, okay, that seems interesting. I'm gonna give it a shot. This was, in some respects, a lot of what I did expect, in terms of the overall high concept plot and premise. But the execution was fairly different than I had expected. This had the art style was, I don't want to say cartoony, it was, it had an animated, cartoonish, clean line kind of a style that I could see this as like an animated feature, yet it didn't seem cartoony, if you know that distinction I'm making. And man, the protagonists we get at the beginning of Joey and Fatima, way younger than I was expecting.
Yeah, this is way more of an all-ages book than I thought it was going to be, and not that there's anything wrong with that, but that wasn't what I thought it was going to be going into it. And I think the way it was pitched, the weaponization of the Midas touch didn't materialize in this issue and maybe will down the road. But this was an odd debut. I thought not particularly well written by Ryan North. I thought some of the dialogue was super corny. Not the type of dialogue I enjoy. And then I don't know, the characters, when they flashed back to some of the pre-Midas Touch stuff with the characters from the past, they didn't seem to talk the way you would think they would talk given the era that they are drawn in. They seemed very out of touch and anachronistic. There's a lot of stuff. It just didn't feel right.
I mean, I see where you're coming from, and I don't disagree with any of that, but I think, well, this was not... I was expecting something, I guess, harder hitting would be the way to phrase it. And this is a lot more all ages, and they did a couple of things that really surprised me. We got a lot on King Midas, a lot more than I was expecting. I was expecting literally a caption or two saying, there was this guy, he touched stuff, it turned to gold, we're going to weaponize that, and that would be about it. But we get a lot on, you know, who he is, how he meets this other guy, when he gets this Midas touch, how that curse plays out for him and everybody. And there were a lot more pages spent on that than I was expecting, but I enjoyed those pages. And it was a twist on the Midas touch that's very much in keeping with as you would expect, but also a very... I was expecting more of a fairy tale-ish, yeah, there's a price to magic, but if you're willing to kind of work within the rules, it's not horrific. It's not, you know, a no-win situation, whereas this was entirely a no-win situation for this poor guy. This was a curse, no two ways about it, and it was a pretty hardcore one, which makes the whole weaponization stuff of what they're setting up really make me wonder, how are they going to handle and control what I consider to be an exceedingly dangerous thing? And there was an aspect of that that kind of runs counter to the very all-ages art style. But that art style also really fits in with the young protagonists. So to me, this was I don't say a mix of contradictions or whatever, but an interesting juxtaposition of a lot of very different things from the Greco-Roman, you know, King Midas stuff to the high-tech, you know, space aliens going down to the planet. Like I said, in some cases was what I was expecting, in other cases was radically different from what I was expecting. But while I do agree with some of your comments about the dialogue being a little, trying to think of a good way to phrase it, not awkward, not over the top, but again, not quite what I would have expected. And I could see where, you know, it could rub some people the wrong way or whatever. It worked for me in a weird way. There were a few places where the kids were, you know, kind of doing the Yahoo, we blew up the bad guys type stuff, sort of exuberance or whatever, that it's, yeah, you know, okay, but it fit.
Well, one of the characters is kind of, is it a dinosaur with a tie?
Yeah.
And then we have one character who's Fatima, so they call her Fatty. I mean, it's just, I don't know. And how? All the defenses around the gold planet.
Mm-hmm.
Whose defenses were those?
Somebody put those up because they realized the thing got loose, it would cause all kinds of stuff. It seemed like there's a Federation, there's Dominion, there were some wars, and that one space race, space Federation or whatever, quarantined the planet. As to exactly what the current, you know, political space climate is highly up for debate. They toss some nuggets out there, but not enough for me to really formulate a coherent theory, or really say, it's clearly this. Mm-hmm. This had, to me, a flavor that was somewhere between the, Hercules, the Legendary Journeys, Xena, that old show, that kind of whimsicalness at times, with a little bit of the pod racing aspect of the newer Star Wars films thrown in with the kid. It was fun. It had an energy to it. It did have a let's not write above anyone aspect to it also. In other words, keeping it very accessible. Could they have matured it, made it a little more sophisticated in places? Yeah, certainly. Did it hurt the way it was? Eh. A little, but not too much.
The cover art I thought was really nice. I thought, well, this is cool. This is interesting. I want to see more of this. And then it's very stark in contrast with the interior art. And so that for me, you know, is kind of a bait and switch almost sometimes when you get that, and you don't get this, the art style that you think you're going to. But I mean, of course, there's always often different covers, different cover artists and various different, covers throughout.
I would agree with that. To me, though, that's a problem with the way comics are solicited just in general these days. Should we have seen the sample of the interior art when they solicited this? Yeah, certainly. But I don't think that's unique to this title, unfortunately.
And my cover has a much more mature dinosaur. It has almost a female-looking character in the middle that looks very male in the interior art, but might be...
With the t-shirt or whatever, the v-neck?
Yeah.
Yeah, we got the same cover.
Inside, the name is Joey, and I assumed it was a boy, but it might be a girl. And then Fatima is not that character on the cover.
Well, what's interesting on the cover is one of them is in a full-blown spacesuit, and one of them is most clearly not.
Yeah.
One of them is inappropriately dressed, and I sure hope it's the one in the spacesuit, otherwise the other kid's going to die.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's also a much more realistic kind of a style.
Yeah.
So I can definitely see the feeling on the bait and switch with the art.
Because
that's pretty much all we saw with the solicits, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, I was intrigued by, I think you might have mentioned the actual title in a preview spotlight or something, and I think that's why I got it, so I blame you for this, actually.
Oh, I see how that goes. Hey, they're not all going to be winners. And to me, though, this... I can see where you're coming from, and I don't fault you for that at all. For me, though, this is something that, I'll admit, I was skeptical when it was 8 issues of it, you know, when it was being solicited, that seemed a little long. But what they're doing here with the different timelines, the different stories, the way we're getting some of this fleshed out, I'm very intrigued by this. I enjoyed this. It was not what I was expecting, but it worked. They did some stuff artistically and narratively that I thought was fascinating. Like when they shift from, okay, we're seeing the Earth, you know, so many days after the miracle to so many days before, and that kind of switch on the horizon line or whatever. They did some interesting stuff. The art worked for me. The dialogue in a few places, yeah, a little odd here or there, but overall worked. I want to see where this goes. I'm curious if they can make it run for 8 issues. But I can definitely see where not everyone who picked up the first issue may stick with it, and I'm suspecting that's going to be where you fall.
I am not going to stick with this. I did like the cover art. I thought that was cool. That's not what I got inside the story that I read. Some of the stuff with King Midas was okay, and I could tolerate it and enjoy it a little bit. None of the stuff with the main characters I liked at all. The art I didn't like. I really don't know what their plan is. I'm assuming, you know, this is, that stuff will come out in future issues, and you know, and normally I would give them that, but I didn't like much of this at all. So for me, it's a 1.
Wow. For me, I'm gonna go with a 4. I was pleased with this. I thought they did some interesting stuff. The biggest surprise for me was just how hardcore they went with the Midas touch, and how it like destroyed the planet in really short order. And it sets up a very interesting, how do they handle this? Where do they go with this? But I can totally see where if you didn't like the lead characters, and I could see where they would be off-putting. So, I mean, I can totally see where you're coming from on that. They weren't off-putting to me, but I can see where they're not lead characters everyone would want to follow. And if you like King Midas, it's like, well, I don't think we're going to see any more of him.
I think he's cool.
Well, we may see him, but I don't think he's going to be doing a whole hell of a lot other than just sitting there as a statue.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see much more of him. Kind of what I thought was kind of, I was looking at some of the back matter there about Boombox in general and that imprint, because I've never read any of their other stuff. This may be one of their first under the...
It is their first.
And it almost seems like maybe this is their answer to Monkey Brain or some of the digital stuff that's coming out, and they want an imprint that's kind of in that style. that's a little more irreverent and kind of just does some wacky ideas and is a little out there maybe. And that's cool. There's room for that. I don't think this was executed very well as their first one. And I'm anxious to see if the next Boombox imprint is A, all ages, and then if it is maybe also another interesting, unique story that is maybe told in a different way. And hopefully the art's semi-consistent between what we're solicited and what we get.
Yeah, I think they could have solicited this more effectively, set expectations better. I think if you had gone in with a better idea of what it was going to be, that might have helped. Not to say it would have turned you around and would have kept you on the book, but certainly I was surprised again how much we got of King Midas and some of that other stuff.
Yeah, but I'm anxious to see if Boombox, what it holds, what the future holds for it. I will check out another Boombox title. I just won't check out this Boombox title.
No, I can understand that. I think they've solicited a second one, maybe. I'd have to double check. I think Boom's going a little imprint crazy right now. They've got more imprints than I think a publisher of that size particularly needs. And it's unclear to me the identity of those imprints. In other words, what sets a Boombox title apart from just a regular Boom title from a, obviously Kaboom Kids is the kids line. But could this not have been part of that?
Or aren't they? Do they own Arkea now?
They own Arkea now.
You know why not use that imprint? I don't know. Why do you need another imprint?
They need to spend a little time, I think, in 2014, solidifying the identity and differentiating the different imprints, and just setting expectations. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see both where that imprint goes, how this title gets received. See if more people agree with you or with me, neither, or if it
somewhere in the middle.
somewhere in the middle. If it makes it the 8 issues, if more people think react to it the way you did than I did, it may not. So we'll see. So what else did you read this week?
Voice in the Dark number 2. By my friend Laramie Taylor, who is a guy.
I've actually exchanged a few emails with him,
and it was good. I really liked the second issue. Glad I got a chance to read it, and it's continuing to speak in a very unique voice, and I like it a lot. I like it a lot, so I'm on board, all in on this one. Really enjoying it.
Laramie has a definite gift for storytelling, because this second issue was literally a Talking Heads issue.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff lead character in there. Yeah, a lot of dialogue in there.
Well, almost nothing but. I mean, the lead characters is hosting a radio talk show. So you got her sitting in the booth. You got the person on the phone she's talking with, and you've got her uncle, the cop, she's texting with. Everything is either text messaging or voice over the phone type stuff. It's literally Talking Heads. Yet it was riveting for the entire issue. That's one that I think is going to be possibly a little bit of a sleeper hit. Once people really, you know, read it, see it, give it a chance, I think they'll be very favorably impressed with the depth of the story and it hooks me in a way that few other titles really have. It reminds me in some respects, obviously totally different subject matter, but of Kirkman's style, where it just kind of sucks you into that world, that universe, those characters. So definitely want to see where that title goes.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Debut, The Illegitimates, and it was by Taron Gillam, the guy from Saturday Night Live, and this was fun, man. This was another James Bondian type take, variation, with James Bond getting killed, and then all the trysts that he's had over the years with all the various female co-stars and their illegitimate children. The MI5 has kept the tabs on these children and helped nurture their training into almost a team of James Bonds, and they're going to try to use them as a replacement for the character that's gone. And it was very cool. I liked it. It was a lot of fun.
It was well done. I've got to see if I've got the other. I got the first issue. I read it, loved it, but I don't remember if I pre-ordered the other ones or not. If not, I need to, because I was really impressed.
Yeah, I did not. So I'm going to be scrambling to try to get some of these back issues. I'm probably not going to be able to get two. I might be able to come back in and get three. We'll see what my good friend at DCBS does.
Yeah, I'm probably going to end up sending them an email if I don't have them on order saying, please add. And what I do as a fallback option when that doesn't work is I just put it on my want list at mycomicshop.com. But yeah, that was well done. A lot of fun. It was just a big week for comics. Oh, yeah. A lot of stuff coming out.
Yeah, man. Saga 17 was another solid issue. We had a little bit more of the paparazzi characters than we had before. That was a nice little touch. And then some ultra-violence as the issue progressed. Still a lot of good stuff in here, a lot of interesting plot points. And I'm sure if you're reading it, you've read it already. And if you're not reading it, this is not the issue to hop on.
Yeah, there's some titles that are really, really good, but you've got to find a good jumping on point. There was a period where, you know, we'd review the wrong issue of Fables to jump on in, or the wrong issue of some other title we like to jump onto. It's always a little frustrating to have a title that people really ought to be reading, but no good on-ramp to get them in there.
We got the long-delayed 10 Grand number 6 by Straczynski. And they've now transitioned fully to C.P. Smith from Ben Tipple Smith. That artist kind of couldn't keep up or lost interest in the title or something. So this is, I would say, 2 or 3 months behind where it should be, which is tough for story momentum. But they've done a good job of kind of riding the ship on this title. It was good. It was great early, and then we had some delays, and so I'm kind of enjoying it, but not as much as I was. And I think a regular schedule will help that a lot.
Yeah, I could see where that would be the case. Did you read the Indestructible Hulk issue that came out?
No, I haven't seen that one.
This was one where it was pretty good. They're dealing with the Inhumanity stuff, and it's basically starts out with Tony Stark and Hank Pym having borrowed Banner's lab, which he's none too keen on. He's got a little bit of an inferiority complex with some of these other super geniuses and such. And he's like, I've got this handled, just give me a little time. Okay, fine, we'll come back in a day. They come back, you know, like 20 hours later or whatever. He's like, I've got it taken care of, just, you know, back the hell off. They see what he's come up with. It's a bomb. They flip out. Wackiness ensues. But it was a good issue in terms of the character dynamics of some of these Avengers that are all, you know, super scientists or whatever. And just kind of the preconceived notion of, you know, Banner's going to mess up. This is how it's going to play out or whatever. It was good. A fun issue.
Good. I lost a little faith in that during the whole time travel stuff. I didn't really enjoy those very much and, kind of lost interest.
I can see that. That was not one of their stronger arcs. What else did I read this week? Shoot First was great stuff. Really enjoy that title.
Yeah, I don't know that.
It's about supernatural entities are invading, and they have a group that's fighting them that's powered by lack of belief. So if you start to fight these things too often and come to, you know, believe in higher powers because you're seeing things you can't otherwise explain, suddenly your weapons stop working on them, and you may get to go meet said higher power. Because you die or something. It's actually some very interesting theological type ideas in some respects. It's fun.
Who's the publisher?
It is Dark Horse. It's different, which is what I like. It's a fun take on a rather unique concept. We also got final issue of Longshot Saves the Marvel Universe. That was a lot of fun. We got another issue of Young Avengers. That's always good.
And this is second to last issue, right?
Gonna be sorry to see that one go. What else we got? We got the Thunderbolts Annual. That was
I heard good things
fun.
About that. I haven't read that one yet either. Zero number 4. That's an Image title by Aless Kott, and it's another secret agent book. And this it has a lot of Astro City in it for me. It's a secret agent's story, but it's a lot of these supporting characters get brought to light for an issue, and then you get their story, and they're very unique, very interesting, and really cool. And Edward's just kind of there, and he doesn't have sometimes he doesn't have the main focus of the book. It's more the supporting character, and then that character's gone, and in the next issue it's somebody new. So there's it's been a lot of fun. Those first four have been pretty strong. I liked three of the four a lot, and that's not bad.
That's not a bad batting average at all.
But yeah, it's really got a really unique voice, and I've been enjoying that one.
Got final part of the current story arc in Star Trek. Still enjoying that. They've got a good sensibility from the movies and stuff like that, staying very much in line with that, which I appreciate. Another issue of Superior Spider-Man and Superior Spider-Man Team-Up. Team-Up was okay. Superior was great. No surprises.
Part four of Thor the Accursed storyline. Mm-hmm. It's still trucking along. Good stuff. Very pretty to look at.
So yeah, ton of great stuff this week. Sizable week. I got some in the neighborhood of about 50 comics or whatever. I'd have to go count them up, but sizable amount. And then, of course, next week being the non-shipping week, we'll have a handful of things. So it'll be nice and quick to read, so that'll be nice. Give me some time to go get some other stuff.
Yeah, it'll definitely be a short week. And when this goes up, it'll go up with still some time for preview spotlight clips.
Yes, definitely. Previews, actually, I got mine with the shipment that I just got, actually yesterday. So it came a week earlier than I was expecting, but, you know, hey, what the hell. I think it'll hit most stores, on the 31st. The preview spotlight, is gonna be, the teleconference will be on the 11th of January in the evening, 5 Central, 7 Pacific. You know, you can do the other time zones, it's all on the forum. And that morning is the deadline for the clips. So please send stuff in. I started the thread actually today as we're recording for this preview spotlight. Put up the 9 or 10 picks I have for this month. I tell you, it's getting harder and harder to find some picks sometimes. Everything's either in the middle of a story or just doesn't kind of strike my fancy or whatever in a lot of cases. And I'm reading a ton of great stuff, but finding, again, that good jumping on point is what I'm looking for when I do picks. But as other people do picks, please just give shout-outs to stuff you're enjoying.
Yeah, I saw a lot of interesting things in previews this time. I have my picks ready at the go. I'm getting ready to start cranking them out.
Awesome. Sounds good. New year, new time for people to start on new titles. Let's see if we can find stuff that everyone's going to enjoy. You know, different people, different tastes. I think we proved that this week with the Midas Flesh. But, you know, hey, if something that works for me isn't working for somebody else, I can't recommend that title to them, nor should I. Yet, there's got to be something they're liking that I'm not. You know what I mean? So, finding the right thing for everybody, that's what it's all about. Anything else?
I think that'll
pretty much do it. Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Forever Evil number 4 from DC, Origin 2 number 1 from Marvel, and Saviors number 1 from Image Comics. And who knows, we might even talk about all 5 other comics that are coming out next week. Justice League number 26 from DC, Avengers 24.0 from Marvel, Doctor Who Special 2013 number 1 from IDW, Deceivers number 1 from Boom Studios, and Robotech Voltron number 1 from Dynamite Entertainment.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.